Good evening, and thank you for joining E*TRADE's fourth quarter and full year 2016 earnings conference call. Joining the call today are Chief Executive Officer, Carl Rossner, and Chief Financial Officer, Michael Pici. Today's call may include forward-looking statements, including statements about E*TRADE's future operational and financial performance and synergies related to the Options House acquisition, which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, we will also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For a reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP figures and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future result of E*TRADE Financial, please refer to our earnings release furnished on Form 8-K and our 10-Ks, 10-Qs, and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are also available at about.etrade.com. Note that the company has not reconciled its forward-looking non-GAAP measures, including non-GAAP adjusted operating margin, to the most directly comparable GAAP measures because material items that impact that measure are out of the company's control and cannot be reasonably predicted. This call will present information as of January 26th, 2017. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. This call is being recorded, and a replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. With that, I will now turn the call over to Mr. Rossner.
Good evening, and thanks to everyone for tuning in. Welcome to our fourth quarter and full year results call. This January call typically provides a natural point to pause and rehash 12 months of accomplishments while looking forward to what the next 12 may bring. While I will provide somewhat of a retrospective, this moment in time is defined by executing with intensity and focusing on our charge to grow the business. While we may be at a natural reflection point, we are anything but paused. After laying out a plan in late Q3 to refocus the company on brokerage growth, this past quarter, we marched forward in devising and beginning to implement the many tactics to deliver on that plan, positioning the company for success. To quickly recap the 2016 highlights, we built solid momentum and closed the year as a leaner, more focused, more agile organization, well-positioned from a financial and capital standpoint. We entered the year lowering the bank's target leverage ratio by 100 basis points, reflecting the continued improvement in our risk profile and our regulatory position. We distributed a significant amount of capital to the parent and seized opportunities to accelerate our share repurchase program, buying in more than $500 million worth of our shares. After bringing our balance sheet to nearly $50 billion, we announced our decision to grow through that threshold and began the work of building out the structure to support that growth. We delivered a commitment to our investors to be responsive to the revenue environment, shifting our investment philosophy to an operating margin framework. We managed the legacy loan portfolio through the bulk of the loan conversions from interest only to fully amortizing, effectively removing the largest remaining credit risk overhang. We completed our first major acquisition in more than a decade, jump-starting a transition back to our scrappy brokerage roots, and realigned our business to be more nimble while achieving meaningful cost savings. Finally, we laid out concrete and tangible growth goals for the company. To this last point, I will turn to our key areas of focus that we believe will drive our growth, all of which I will subsequently expand on. First, finalize the Options House integration and realize the full potential of this combination. The team, customer base, and functionality we acquired are vital to reaching our growth goals. The integration activities began the day after closing, and we are tracking to plan. This process is about much more than personnel and infrastructure. At its heart, it's about our customers and ensuring each and every one of them has access to and appreciation of the best of what we have to offer across platforms. Second, breathe new life into our marketing. As I've mentioned before, our challenge is not one of brand awareness, but one of perception. As such, we are hard at work developing a plan to move the needle on our brand identity, better positioning E-Trade as a home for both active traders and long-term investors, and doing so in a thoughtful, effective, and typically irreverent way. Third, take advantage of our operational leverage. In no uncertain terms, our commitment to be responsive to the revenue environment and our spending remains the bedrock of our plans, even as we look to accelerate growth. We have a powerful, fully scalable model, and we continually evaluate opportunities to further optimize our cost structure and investments. And fourth, continue to dispassionately assess opportunities for efficient capital deployment, including reviewing inorganic growth prospects. As our earnings profile strengthens, so too does our capital generation and our prospects for its deployment. While we are focused on balance sheet growth and plan to resume share buybacks later this year, we will continue to review all value-generative paths for our shareholders' capital and adapt as the environment evolves. This list is far from exhaustive, and in some ways, it's just the tip of the iceberg. With a small handful of folks focused on assessing potential opportunities, the majority of my team is working hard to maintain momentum on the charge forward to meet our growth objectives. And to reiterate those targets, in the short to medium term, we aim to improve our account and asset growth rates by 200 to 300 basis points, which, using Q3 as the starting point, would equate to a brokerage account growth rate of 4.75% to 5.75%, and annual brokerage asset growth about 100 basis points higher than that. We aim to shift the mix of our trades to be 35% in derivatives, predominantly in options, but also including a significant increase to our futures volume. And we plan to grow our managed assets to $6 billion. To review our current state, this quarter we grew brokerage accounts at an annualized rate of 2.8% and brokerage assets at a rate of 4.7%. 29% of our fourth quarter trades were in derivatives, with roughly 27% in options. It should go without saying that integrating platforms and expanding our offering to customers is paramount to growing this metric, as is enhancing and fully integrating our futures offering. On managed assets, we ended the period with $3.9 billion, including around $240 million in adaptive portfolio accounts. We continue to see significant opportunity for growth across these accounts with the right marketing and customer positioning. Our most immediate and impactful goal is to complete the Options House integration. I am pleased with our progress and feel good about our plans for completing this. The two remaining components, platform integration and clearing conversion, are both slated to occur in Q3. We aim to deliver superior active trading capabilities to the combined customer base, incorporating the best of both offerings, and we have the right folks in technology and product focused on delivering just that. And while delivering an exceptional digital experience is in our DNA, we must never rest on our laurels and must always seize opportunities to improve. The integration affords us a unique moment in time to review our entire digital offering with a fresh perspective and a few new sets of eyes to further captivate our customers. On marketing, we've restructured the team and installed new leadership with deep industry experience. We've also aligned the department within the brokerage business and positioned the new team to ensure they are focused on our key success metrics. And at the top of a long list of initiatives is the relaunch of our brand. We've enjoyed phenomenal brand awareness, and we intend to build on that to reclaim our challenger position in the industry. Expect to see more around mid-year. In the meantime, we are working on updates to our website, including an overhaul to the look and feel, along with improved navigation. Further, we are working to listen, understand, and respond to customer feedback in much better ways. We are off to a solid start, and I'm excited for our customers to experience the changes that lie ahead. With respect to operational efficiency, of the utmost importance to us and to me personally is remaining highly mindful of how we spend our shareholders' money. Part and parcel of this is our op margin commitment. During 2017, we will manage to a target of 38%. This number is adjusted to exclude provision for loan losses, which has been a significant benefit to earnings for the past six quarters. But importantly, it includes all planned costs related to balance sheet growth and the Options House integration. Mike Pizzi will provide additional details on this, but I cannot stress enough that under my watch, we will be steadfast in our expense discipline. If we identify areas for investment which expand beyond this target, we will have to fund them through additional savings found within the business. And finally, on capital deployment, we continue to focus on opportunities to drive meaningful value through product stewardship of our shareholders' capital. We have two very well-established capital initiatives for 2017, growing our balance sheet and resuming share repurchases. We officially commenced the first, and as of this morning, we can boast roughly $52 billion in consolidated assets. Our plans have us reaching $57 billion by mid-year, slightly higher than our original assumption, and ending the year around $62 billion. This avenue has only increased in attractiveness over the past quarter as rates rose and the amount of available deposits grew. Further, with all the chatter around regulatory requirements and thus costs possibly being eased under the new administration, we are hopeful this path could become even more compelling as the year progresses. In addition, as a savings and loan holding company, the timing to comply with the enhanced bank holding company requirements has been extended relative to our original assumption. We now expect we will have until 2019 to become compliant with CCAR, resolution planning, and certain other onerous and costly requirements. Separately, the Fed announced a one-year LCR compliance phase-in period for banks newly crossing $50 billion. And regarding the second initiative, as I previously mentioned, we intend to resume share purchases in the second half of the year. On a separate yet concurrent track, we continue to evaluate opportunities for inorganic growth. To be certain, I am confident in our company's organic prospects, but vigorously support our responsibility to evaluate inorganic opportunities, as our platform offers immense scalability and additional opportunities remain. To provide some color on the primary areas that warrant our attention, first, brokerage. Given the scalable nature of the brokerage business, opportunities that afford additional account and asset volumes typically present attractive economics. However, there's a noticeable lack of inventory in what I would call the traditional category at present. We continue to keep our eye on opportunities that can present new capabilities to our customer base. Second, stock plan. We have a top-rated equity compensation platform and could easily add scale to it. We continue to look for opportunities that can expand the scale or add scope to what we offer to our corporate clients and their plan participants. Third, wealth management. This could provide a natural extension of our existing cash management and banking capabilities that we offer to our brokerage customers and stock plan participants. We have an acquisition channel into the high net worth segment of the market, but fall short on capabilities to service them following an exercise of stock plan assets. Further, the expansion of cash-related capabilities could prove valuable, particularly as we've unshackled our balance sheet growth. And finally, advisor services. This space is quite broad, but our focus is on RIA platforms, as they could further our asset and account growth capabilities and leverage much of our existing infrastructure. While we would be a late entrant, the RIA channel continues to be a high-growth segment within our industry. If we deem that the RIA channel is compelling, entering via acquisition would be the only feasible route at this stage. To be clear, we are not pursuing a transformative transaction, and any potential acquisition would be viewed through our capital deployment lens. My management team and our board are extremely focused on the appropriate use of and return on capital, and we will hold that focus as we evaluate inorganic growth opportunities. Also, as we demonstrated with Options House, we will be diligent and anything we pursue would support our core business and align with our digital ethos. Turning now to our results. Net income of $552 million, or $1.98 per share, represents our best year since 2006. It also includes a net benefit of 33 cents per share related to provision and income tax benefits, partially offset by executive severance and certain restructuring costs. This reflects our commitment to meticulously manage expenses, the wind down of our legacy loan portfolio, which outperformed our expectations greatly, and the strength of our business model, even during a period of tepid growth. As for metrics, 2016 was a curious year as the markets opened in January and February with one of the bigger sell-offs in recent memory, regained their footing, and then went on a rally following the election, with major indexes reaching all-time highs. Meanwhile, our customers opportunistically sold during periods of positive market activity, particularly around Brexit and the election, marking the first full year on record they were net sellers. Our DARTs for the year were 164,000, up 6% from 2015, with derivatives representing 26% as compared to 24% in the prior year. These increases are related to Options House, which is fully reflected in our Q4 metrics. As for January, our DARTs are currently tracking up 8% from December, including a nice bump yesterday as the Dow hit a historic high. Customer margin balances ended the year at $7.1 billion, up from $6.8 billion at the end of Q3. After hitting an intra-quarter high just after the election of $7.3 billion, they trailed off over the last 6 weeks as we saw additional customer net selling. For the year, we added 105,000 net new brokerage accounts, excluding the Options House acquisition and the impact of shutting down our Hong Kong and Singapore operations, representing 3.3% growth and a record low attrition rate of 8.4%. This is a modest improvement from 2015 levels. We brought in $9.4 billion of net new brokerage assets during the year, representing a 3.8% growth rate, flat with 2015 levels. In closing, it was an important year for E-Trade, but as I said earlier, we're very much in the thick of things when it comes to the work we have to do. As 2016 was a year of refocus and resolve, 2017 will be a year of execution. We've brought the company back to its core brokerage roots, embraced our digital spirit, and have become more nimble. We've begun to define who we are, and we're working to incorporate a strong message in our marketing to connect with and re-engage traders and investors alike. I'm excited to be leading a fantastic team of committed professionals. When I took over this seat about 4 months ago, we established an aggressive timeline, and the ensuing sense of urgency remains ever present within our walls. It's only been a quarter, and I won't pretend that our metrics yet reflect our efforts, but I fully expect we will go a great distance in the year to come. And with that, I'll turn it over to our CFO, Mike Pizzi.
Thanks, Carl. For the quarter, we reported net income of $127 million, or 46 cents per share. That compares to $139 million, or 51 cents per share in the prior quarter, and $89 million, or 30 cents per share in the year-ago quarter. Revenues for the quarter were $509 million, up $23 million from the prior quarter, reflecting the first full quarter impact of our acquisition. Year over year, revenues were up $70 million, primarily related to Options House, a larger balance sheet, increased customer cash, a better interest rate environment, and organic growth in trading activity. Net interest income was $288 million, flat with the prior quarter, as both our balance sheet and net interest margin held relatively steady. Net interest margin of 260 basis points was slightly above our expectations due to a better interest rate environment and an increase in average margin balances. Rates rose on both the long and short end of the curve, and while the benefit wasn't fully reflected in Q4, it's a meaningful positive for us going forward. Our average reinvestment rate is currently in the 225 to 250 basis point range, which is consistent with where it has been following the post-election bond market sell-off. In terms of forecasting full-year NIM, if we hold margin rates and interest rates flat with where they ended Q4, grow the balance sheet at our planned pace, and assume no rate increases during 2017, we'd expect NIM to land in the range of 250 to 255 basis points. However, if we project a Fed funds increase in June, as the market broadly assumes, and a corresponding increase in term rates, this forecast would improve by around 10 basis points. Commissions revenue of $122 million increased $15 million quarter over quarter. DARTs increased 24% sequentially, and our commission per trade decreased 55 cents to $10.42. The reduction in average commission per trade reflects the full quarter impact of Options House and thus provides a good go-forward run rate. Fees and service charges increased $12 million quarter over quarter, driven by a full quarter of Options House, as well as additional fees from cash held off balance sheet. There are a number of moving parts on this line in 2017. First, once we complete the clearing conversion, Options House margin balances will move onto our balance sheet and begin earning net interest income as opposed to fees and service charges. Second, as we move customer cash from third parties onto our own balance sheet throughout the year, the associated revenue will similarly be recognized through net interest income. Third, we assume the rate earned on third-party cash will increase from around 45 basis points during 2016 to around 70 basis points for the full year 2017, assuming a sustained better interest rate environment. Finally, we will realize a full year of run rate, associated with Options House order flow revenue. Other revenues increased $1 million sequentially to $11 million. Securities and other gains were $8 million, down from $14 million in the prior quarter, which spiked as we took advantage of Brexit-driven market volatility. As we grow the balance sheet this year, we expect fewer opportunities to realize gains and thus expect the 2017 quarterly levels to be roughly $5 million. We recorded a provision benefit of $18 million in the quarter. The allowance reduced by $14 million to end at $221 million, as net charge-offs were a recovery of $4 million. With the loan portfolio now just at $3.8 billion, it is a mere fraction of our total assets. HELOC conversions are 85% complete as of year-end and will be more than 95% complete at the end of Q1. Moving on to expenses. Non-interest expense for the quarter was $322 million, down $1 million sequentially. This quarter included $7 million of restructuring costs primarily related to Options House and $2 million related to Crossing 50. The prior quarter included $6 million of executive severance and $25 million of restructuring and other acquisition-related activities. Adjusting for the unique items, non-interest expense was increased $21 million, primarily from the inclusion of Options House for the full quarter. Our adjusted operating margin for the quarter was above target at 37%. That number excludes provision benefit of $18 million, but includes about $9 million of non-recurring costs primarily related to Options House and the $50 billion initiative. With respect to our operating margin guidance for 2017, as Carl highlighted, we are targeting 38%, inclusive of all planned one-time costs related to the acquisition of Options House and the build-out of our systems and personnel to comply with heightened regulatory standards. We are not modeling any movements in the federal funds rate, though we recognize that broad market expectations include at least one increase during the year. If this does occur, it could provide either upside to our operating margin or an opportunity to invest further in the business should the returns be appropriate. Looking forward to a sustained better rate environment, we expect our operating margin to settle in the mid-40% range, which reflects our belief that in a stronger rate environment, a rising tide lifts all boats and increased competition and investment needs would likely be a reality to keep up with the business environment. I'm happy to provide this all-inclusive number, but I also recognize the desire for investors to track our progress on the one-time expenses we've laid out. So to provide further insight, we announced expected deal-related costs to total $52 million and incurred approximately $15 million in 2016. Now, with more clarity around the integration, we expect the total number to be closer to $46 million, with approximately $22 million to come through in 2017. Similarly, connected to the balance sheet expansion, where we initially outlined $50 million in total implementation-related charges over 2 years, with work well underway, we have refined our estimate. Our updated assumption is for roughly $20 million in implementation-related costs over the next 2 years, with approximately half of that in 2017. We continue to expect the recurring component to be $15 million annually. In terms of timing and trajectory, we expect our first quarter op margin to be in the mid-30% range, pressured by seasonally higher marketing and compensation-related expense, along with elevated non-recurring costs. However, as we realize the benefit of a larger balance sheet and the integration progress leads to synergy capture, we expect it to improve throughout the year, exiting the year with Q4 in the low 40% range. As for capital, during the quarter, we distributed $150 million up to the parent, comprising $100 million from the broker and $50 million from the bank. For the full year, we moved an impressive $858 million up to the parent, including $435 million from the broker. We expect ongoing distributions from the broker to be in line with excess capital generation, which was $70 million in the fourth quarter. That's the amount we intend to move in Q1. The bank distribution was again below its prior quarter earnings of $118 million as we retained capital to fund planned balance sheet growth. In 2017, we plan to consume a meaningful amount of capital at the bank and grow the balance sheet. Accordingly, our current plans include a halt to dividends from the bank to the parent until 2018. Sticking with our balance sheet, we ended the quarter at $49 billion, with customer cash held by third parties at approximately $17 billion. And pro forma for the Options House integration, about $13.5 billion of those balances are readily available to move on to our balance sheet. We crossed the $50 billion mark the first week of January, and as Carl noted, today we are at approximately $52 billion. Crossing the $50 billion threshold has been an important part of our plan since the middle of last year and has grown increasingly more attractive over time. While the political landscape has infused meaningful uncertainty into the future of regulation, we continue to plan for full compliance under the current framework. That said, if the $50 billion threshold were meaningfully raised and the requirements surrounding CCAR, resolution planning, and LCR were eliminated for companies of our size, the associated costs could further reduce. Hypothetically, if we were to limit our regulatory build-out to only the elements we believe we should address in any case, we believe our current assumptions for roughly $20 million in implementation costs plus $15 million in running costs would reduce to around $15 million upfront and $10 million ongoing. Now, as for the timing of growth, it will be dictated largely by the amount of available capital. We ended the year with Bank Tier 1 leverage ratio at 8.8%. implying about a $275 million of capital in excess of 8%. Our plan remains to lower the bank leverage ratio to a targeted minimum of 7.5% this quarter, and we are in active dialogue with our regulators on this topic. At that point, the parent leverage ratio with a targeted minimum of 7% would become our binding constraint. So in summary, we have a lot going on. I'm excited about where we are, what we have in the works, and the opportunities that lay ahead. And with that, operator, we will open the call for questions.
Certainly. And ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for the first question. And our first question comes from the line of Richard Repetto with Sandler O'Neill. You may proceed with your question.
Yeah, good evening, guys. I guess the first question is for Carl or Mike would be on the 38% pre-provision margin. It seems conservative. It seems like you've taken out a lot of costs. You know, you had the costs, the $21 million, you know, that you already had taken out. And you got lower SIFI costs now as well as synergies from the Option House. Can you give us a little bit more detail on walking, you know, because we have higher margins than that, you know, with these changes that you've given us here tonight in regards to SIFI and so forth?
Yeah, Rich, if you back out the one-time items that we talked about in the remarks there, specifically the integration costs, which we project over the current, you know, over the current year, plus the build out of the SIFI costs in terms of both the one time at around $10 million and then the recurring building to about $15 million. You know, that's gonna drive that margin higher. So we are including them in that margin guidance. We did that largely for simplicity.
Okay. All right. I guess another question would be: can you give us the pro forma, you know, DART growth? You gave it because you yourselves have emphasized, you know, accounts, assets, and trading. So just the pro forma DART growth, 4Q over 3Q.
Okay, Q3 pro forma DART should be 173, Rich.
Okay. Okay, and then very last question is, it looks like the sweep cash, there was a buildup of, you know, a couple billion in sweep, off-balance sheet sweep cash. Was that just I'm just trying to see, usually it felt like people were moving more into the markets than coming out as they did the prior quarter.
Net selling, customers have been very tactical all year. The year opened with the market going down, we saw a lot of net buying off of that. As the year went up, we saw degrees of selling, very tactical around the election, customers really buying and then really sort of, taking gains, quickly on the market move.
Got it. Okay. Very helpful. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rich.
Our next question comes from the line of Devin Ryan with JMP Securities. You may proceed with your question.
Hey, thanks. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Devin.
So obviously nice net new assets the past 2 months, $3 billion. Just trying to get a sense of if you can, how much of that you thought was maybe an election bump versus something you could actually point to that you feel like you're doing. And maybe along the same lines, we're talking a lot about increasing kind of the active trader sales effort. So maybe just a little bit more specifics around what you're doing there. And then just as we see that growth come through, how we should think about the profitability of that. I'm assuming there'll probably be some promotions with that as well.
Okay. Let me take the second part of the question first around, active trader sales. The way we've talked about it and the way that we continue to look at it, we have a very solid active trader group, right, and a group of customers who are at the higher end of our book who we've provided, very good services to, and we're building out a team to really make sure that we're getting the best for them in everything that we do. So more to come in terms of what we're directing at them in terms of platforms, in terms of the option house integration, the options platform that we will go out. So that team is under construction, but that's a very important, avenue for us and a very big part of our revenue. So, Mike, you want to go into the?
Yeah, specifically in the first part around the quarter, I would say that the election had a lot to do with some of the volumes and re-engagement of the retail customer. Obviously, we've seen a pretty good sort of sector rotation in the market from various sectors that have been lagging, prior in the indexes. Customers engaged on that, the higher volatility, the movements in the market, all were very, very beneficial during the period. We've got a lot of things in flight around growth. I'd like to say that, some of that was some of what we immediately put in place, but I have to give credit to the market environment as really supporting the overall effect in the quarter.
Got it. That's great color. And then just with respect to the balance sheet growth, the $57 billion that's targeted by the middle of the year, is that just an illustration, kind of based on your estimate of capital build? Just trying to think if capital's building faster and that's the best use of capital, could you actually add a portion of that $5.5 billion of additional deposits faster?
There's a number of considerations. We're taking the money back from external third-party banks. We have a capital plan that we are going to present with our regulators that we've been in dialogue up until this point. So yes, we could go faster if capital is available, but it is really an estimate based around capital build and capital availability to do this in a fairly thoughtful way over the course of the year.
Got it. Okay. Just last quick one here. SEC lending. How are you thinking about rates there and the outlook for that part of the business?
Look, it's obviously a business that ebbs and flows with the degree of hard to borrows in the market and the degree of market activity. The fourth quarter, had a bit of volatility to it, but overall pretty healthy levels, and expecting really that to continue as the market environment continues throughout this year. Overall, I think the best way to think about that is about how it should scale overall with the size of the margin book. Bigger margin book should scale directly into the more loanable collateral. The only thing I would add to that is if we see any significant change in the IPO market or any significant amount of hard to borrows increasing in the market, then we should be able to do a little bit better out of that book.
Yeah, but the NIM guidance essentially reflects kind of what it's been at, not some big change.
I think it's Q4 is a pretty good overall run rate for right now.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
Our next question comes from the line of Connor Fitzgerald with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon. Just want to talk on the operating margin target of 46% with the rate uplift. Obviously, quite a good deal better than you're doing today. Just want to understand your confidence of being able to drop the better revenue to the bottom line. And then just on a technical aspect, does the $144 million expense number, sorry, the 1444 number, include the $70 million of expense synergies from Options House?
Yeah, so just in terms of our, you know, sort of confidence level to drop it to the bottom line, Mike's prepared remarks, right, had a statement in there about this impacting sort of all boats equally in terms of a rising tide. So what we looked at there when we sort of look forward in a increasing rate environment, there, in all likelihood, there will be competitive pressures around pricing, around going after active traders, and we'll still be in the hand-to-hand combat that we are. So fairly confident that we'll be able to drop quite a bit of it down, but we also know that we're going to be in quite a bit of pricing pressure and other changes as interest rates rise. Mike, you want to cover the last piece?
Yeah, look, the slide really is a pro forma of long-term earnings power. So the expense base is directly taken from the operating margin target. So in that sense, yes, it should include everything, but this is not guidance in for 2017 in terms of what the exact expenses should be running through. So I just want to clarify, you know, when we talk about the synergy target, what we're showing on sort of the long-term slide versus the evolution. And then just to reiterate Carl's point, you know, we do think the market will grow more competitive. There is an increase in both columns on that chart about the amount of expenses there. But, you know, we have to respond to the competitive environment. We feel it's going to get more competitive, but we feel it's very competitive today. And so while there is an increase in the overall expense base, you know, to maintain that competition and get to those level operating margin levels, the market can change and competition can increase beyond what we're expecting.
That's helpful. I won't build the 46% into my 2017 numbers just yet. And then, Carl, just wanted to get an update on the interest level in M&A in the RIA space. I know you touched on that in your prepared remarks. Just wanted to hear how you were thinking through how you would consider acquisitions in that space, just given the uncertainty around the DOL, and then just giving your comments about being focused on the returns to shareholders. You know, on my math, I think it's a 12% return on equity on the incremental balance sheet growth. So should shareholders expect that any M&A you would pursue would have to have a return on invested capital above that level?
Well, there's a little bit of overall lift, I think, in the rate environment that's giving us a pretty good overall return in the current environment. So I think your math is on par, correct. It's going to be in the 12% range overall, and that's really the best use of capital. From a pure cost of equity standpoint, we're probably a little bit below it, so we're probably achieving a spread to that. But I think right now in the current environment, the best use of capital is to grow the balance sheet, and that's what we're doing.
And just to get to your point about appetite and sort of where we are, we are looking opportunistically, you know, in that space, and it is the only logical way to get into it is through an acquisition. So if I had to look into my cards and sort of see where we were, it would make sense to go look at a platform that we could use to build. Right? We're not looking at transformative transactions or a big, messy transaction, but rather one that would provide us additional sort of green shoots for growth. But the returns would have to be there, right, as we've shown and as we'll continue to say to you all. We are stewards of our shareholders' capital and our shareholders' dollars, and we will put it through the capital lens each and every time.
Thanks for taking my questions.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Christian Bolu with Credit Suisse. You may proceed with your question.
Good evening, guys. On the growth prospects here, just putting aside inorganic opportunities, just bigger picture, curious how you think about where the growth will come from. Are you expecting to expand the pie here and bring in new customers into the brokerage industry, or is this a play for market share from your competitors?
So Christian, it's a bit of both. Right. When you look at what we've done around Options House and bringing in those capabilities and what we have in the number one rated options platform coming across, that's new offering. When you package that with education and the right active trader sales team and sales program that we're putting together now, we think that that'll be a nice area of growth for us. There's also some dislocation, as everyone knows, going on in the marketplace. So there are active traders out there who are interested in looking for and finding new homes. And then, you know, getting better at the services we offer and trying to mine into our stock plan participant population that we have, who are already customers on us, who don't use us for anything else than executing their stock plan trades. So there are a number of areas of focus that we believe that we can get into quite quickly and in quite a meaningful way that will help us drive this growth. So both of your points, we are hitting very hard.
Okay, got it. And then just a question on liquidity management on the balance sheet. I guess if you get to $62.5 billion target, just correct me if I'm wrong, but it will mean effectively all your client cash will be on the balance sheet in securities with duration around 3 to 4 years. I mean, there's a bit of cash, but most of it will be in securities. To the extent we see a massive upturn in retail engagement and there's a significant move away from cash, just help me understand how you manage liquidity, just given, best I can tell, that would be the relative to other retail brokers, you would have, I think, the kind of most of your cash in fairly long-dated securities.
Yeah, I think the best way to think about that is the composition of the portfolio. The portfolio has a significant amount of fairly short duration securities or floating rate securities in it. All of the securities in the portfolio at this point are agency backed, with many of them being full faith and credit guaranteed securities. They're incredibly liquid and allow us to reposition the balance sheet quite readily.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Christian.
Our next question comes from the line of Steven Chubak with Nomura Instinet. You may proceed with your question.
Hi, good evening.
Steven.
So wanted to dig into slide 21 for a moment. Now, it looks like the majority of the balance sheet and business growth targets that are laid out here are actually within reach or within grasp at this point. And I'm just wondering whether you believe that most of these targets are actually achievable on within a reasonable timetable, call it by 2018. And if the forward curve, in fact, materializes and we get 4 rate hikes or 100 basis points, I just want to gauge whether that 273, if that's an aspirational target or if you think it's readily achievable within the next 2 years.
I think the scenarios we are outlining on the slide are readily achievable. Getting back to one of the prior questions, you have to take out the investment items in the $50 billion regulatory build-out, the integration cost. But assuming we execute on all of that and deliver our growth targets, we should be able to achieve the economics that are shown in the slide.
Got it. And just switching over to the expense side, Mike, it's very encouraging to see the progress that you guys have made, and you laid out a lot of the different changes in terms of the guidance components that you laid out previously. I'm just wondering how we should be thinking about the jumping off point for expenses in 2017 after adjusting for all the new guidance, or maybe said differently, what expense base is actually contemplated in that 38% margin goal?
I think we, in terms of the jumping off point, I think we gave clarity around sort of the early part of the year. Keep in mind, Q1 has certain, FICA resets and other things that roll through the comp and ben line. We are hiring people for the $50 billion initiative. There's some consulting spend going through that is going up, a little bit early in terms of where the balance sheet's going to be. So operating margin in the early part of the year is going to be a little bit pressured, but probably, in that mid-30s range. But we are going to be exiting, hopefully, right around 40 to just above 40.
Okay. Thanks for taking my questions, guys.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Harris with Wells Fargo. You may proceed with your question.
Thanks. Regarding Options House integration, I mean, there's some pretty big things to happen in Q3. You talked about that, one of those being clearing conversion. Are there no more synergies coming out until that occurs, and then when those things occur, we'll get synergies kind of in the back half of 2017?
To this point, we've been very, faithfully executing on a lot of the expense synergies, are well on our way. But you're right. The amount of synergies coming out over the next period of time will slow until the conversion is complete. The conversion is really necessary to bring all of the revenue synergies online. That's going to be the cash portion, the investment of the cash as well as the margin economics. And then following that, that will be where there'll be additional costs.
Okay. But we're not providing any specific guidance around what the synergies might be for 2017, the dollar number.
No, not at this time.
Okay.
We're on track to deliver the synergies as we originally outlined them.
Gotcha. Okay. And then just to get clarity on one item, if we, you know, if we do get another Fed rate hike, you know, in 17 or maybe actually even two, how should we be thinking about the incremental margin from that?
You know, I think the additional rate hike should drive if it comes in mid-year. And I think if you look at the Fed fund futures curve, you know, I think right now it's probably looking around June is sort of where it's priced in at. That would give us about 10 basis points of expansion in the net interest margin for the full year. You could do the math on what that means around dollars. You know, in terms of, you know, what that means for us is where we are in our in building out for growth, if there are opportunities to invest that additional and to continue growth or accelerate growth, we're certainly going to take it if the returns are appropriate. If not, we're going to have the discipline to let it roll through. And I think that's the way I think you should think about it. If the opportunities are there, we'll make the investment.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Brian Bedell with Deutsche Bank. You may proceed with your question.
Great. Thanks guys. Good evening. Just a little drill down again on the NIM for this year. Mike, if you can maybe talk about margin loan pricing, if you expect to be able to you know, get all of that for each Fed hike, and then your assumption of the yield curve that is baked in the NIM guidance, and then also if you can talk about any kind of sweep deposit beta, when you would expect to be passing that through to customers.
Yeah, I think we are, in terms of overall margin, I think we did pretty good this quarter. You can see, you know, we were able to push through some of the margin from the late rate hike, and some of that just in terms of the mix composition of the book also helped us out this quarter as customers, you know, more at the higher rack rates re-engaged a bit. We will continue to price the margin book, you know, effectively with movements in Fed funds, but we're well aware that much of the market is negotiated pricing, and we'll continue to negotiate against the competitive backdrop. You know, looking at the cash side of the balance sheet, we haven't really taken any actions yet. We're looking at the overall landscape of the competitive market, where money fund rates are, and looking to see, you know, when we will have to do it. But at this point, we've not really taken any action into effect.
And the sensitivity to the what yield curve assumptions do you have in sort of?
Oh yeah, we gave the NIM guidance we gave assumes no additional Fed rate hikes. So the way we do that is we essentially have just grown the balance sheet according to our plan, effectively reinvesting at the marginal reinvestment rate and not increasing the federal funds rate. If we get one increase in mid-year, you can add 10 basis points to that range.
I meant on the longer part of the curve. So if let's say we got another 50 basis point on the 10-year, how would your sensitivity change?
Oh, yeah. We are essentially allowing the longer-term rates to evolve according to the forward curve, so modeling some degree of upward drift if in that additional 10 basis points. But in our base NIM guidance, we are holding rates constant.
Okay, that's good. And then just on price competition, I guess how are you thinking about, you know, with the industry consolidation going on, are you looking at it as an opportunity to get customers from emerging entities, and how aggressive, I guess, would you be on that? And would that change depending on the environment? Obviously, you know, if the macro backdrop is more supportive for revenue growth and your margins, would you tend to get more aggressive on that for customer acquisition?
Yeah, we're actually pretty aggressive on customer acquisition now. It's one of the first things that we turned our focus to. As I said before, you know, there's a lot of dislocation, including the, you know, recently announced merger, and there are a lot of folks who might be willing to look at new homes. So we're definitely focused on that, and it's something we're driving at.
So you've ramped it up right now, basically.
Yeah, we have.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Allen with Buckingham. You may proceed with your question.
Afternoon, guys.
Chris.
I was just curious, and I apologize if I missed this, the balance sheet guidance of 57, I think it was mid-year, and then 62 at the end of the year, how much does that assume is coming from the transfer of third-party deposits, and how much is assumed from organic growth?
But if you look at the amount we have, it's a $13.5 billion. We have enough third-party cash today to achieve those balance sheet targets. We're not really disclosing what our internal growth estimates are for cash for the year, but we have the capability really of delivering on the balance sheet forecast out of the $13.5 billion pool that's available today.
Got it. Okay, that's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Carrier with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please proceed with your question.
All right, thanks, guys. Maybe just on the commission rate, you guys mentioned, most of it just with Options House. Just, curious, as you're bringing on clients and if there's, some movement in the industry, like, do you see much pressure there, whether it's on margin, or whether it's on, your commissions? I know you guys mentioned longer term, as rates are rising, you might see, more competition. I think that's, expected. But in this current environment, are you seeing much, yet?
I mean, we don't, when we deal with customers and we sort of get into moving customer balances or talking about people finding a new home and coming to trade with us, it's almost always hand-to-hand combat, right? So there's pricing pressures around bringing folks in on negotiated pricing. Folks who come in on our rack rate pressure or others in the industry, we haven't seen a lot of downward pressure on. But for the larger accounts, the active traders and the folks who really make a difference in terms of what they deliver for us and for our shareholders, there's absolutely pressure, and that increases every day, right? The dislocation is driving a lot of that. There's a lot of competition for that pool of individuals. So there's definitely a finite pool of active traders out there.
Okay, and then just as a follow-up, you mentioned in the prepared remarks just, a focus on, like, the marketing, the strategy, and, a shift, versus maybe the past year. Just wanted to get a sense on, where's the time or where's, the money being spent and what are, the expected, returns or the goals if you look over, the next 12, 24 months, from that shift?
We're looking and sort of devising the entire marketing plan right now. Right now we're spending, a lot of our time and efforts going after customers, whether it be through website, email campaigns, or others, developing an entire new approach to our brand that we hope to launch by the middle of 17. So I would expect a lot more on that. In terms of the returns, we're going to look at marketing to drive a significant amount of our customer and account, acquisition and asset acquisition that we've talked about. So looking at that to be quite a bit of it. We have increased our marketing spend in the numbers that we have, but we'll stay within our op margins, on that spend.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Doug Muir with SunTrust. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good evening. I just had a question about the stock buyback or the potential stock buyback. You talked about how you're going to be holding more capital in the bank this year, but you're still going to see what you can do on the second half of the year for the stock buyback. I would assume that you would buy back approximately what you could dividend up from the broker plus maybe some surplus cash you already have. Is that sort of the way to think about it?
I would think about it this way. We have an amount of capital, and we're generating capital through earnings that's going to keep our Tier 1 leverage, allow us to grow the balance sheet, keep our Tier 1 leverage ratio at the binding constraint of 7. As we look at sort of that balance sheet evolution in a sort of thoughtful way over the course of the year, as we get into the latter half of the year, we think we're going to have enough capital to return to buybacks. Now, if the best use of capital is to accelerate, the balance sheet growth or we have more cash available, that's going to leave us sort of with a high-quality decision to make as to whether we want to get back to buybacks or whether we want to continue to pursue the balance sheet. But when we look at our capital plan today, when we look at how we're bringing money over, when we look at the expectation of our forecast, we feel pretty good that we'll be able to return to buybacks in the back half of the year.
Okay, thanks. That's all my questions.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Cyprys with Morgan Stanley. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking the question. Just on the stock plan business, looks like the unexercised stock plan assets are down about 2 years in a row now, $118 billion down to about $103. So can you just talk a little bit about the competitive dynamics within the stock plan business? What sort of growth rate do you see for the industry, and what your sort of thoughts are in terms of what you do differently now in terms of gaining share?
Yeah, I mean, look, the stock plan business is really the B2B component of it that you're talking about. There's a pretty long lead time on, you know, getting new clients over and converting them onto our system. I mean, pretty happy with our Equity Edge Online platform that we have, right? It's an industry leader, and we continue to add new clients. But that business is extremely lumpy in terms of where the markets are, in terms of where the particular stock is. You know, you get folks who get stock for the first time. It's in, it's loaded, it's, you know, it's gone the next day because they've earmarked that for a, you know, personal spending goal or for a car or house. So it gets a little lumpy, and it's hard to sort of dig into, you know, where we are or what we think on that front. I am very happy with the pipeline that we have out there right now, and I'm very happy with the team that services that business.
Any thoughts on M&A for that business?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we're thinking about, you know, as I said a little bit earlier on the stock plan side, looking both at scale, because a lot of participants in that business are either looking to get out or sort of looking to move around, and we're quite happy with it because it's a natural extension and a natural feeder to our channels here. So we like that, and also looking at other opportunities to deliver additional products on that line as long as it makes sense. And anything, even in that space, we'll look through the capital lens to see if it makes sense for our shareholders. But, yeah, it's absolutely one of the areas we're looking at.
Okay, great. Just as a quick follow-up here, just on retirement, just curious how you're planning to grow your retirement-related assets and how you think about prioritizing that versus the investment spend that you have going on with the active trader side of the business, and then maybe you could just talk to any sort of gaps you have on the retirement side today, if any, and how you want to close that.
Yeah, look, to me, it goes hand in hand, right? We need the active traders, and we also need investors. As I said earlier, it's with us, with E-Trade, it's about perception, right? Are we the home for people's longer-term money? Do they look to us as the, you know, as the company who they want to keep their dollars with? So a big part of our marketing push and our marketing campaign that we'll be developing will be to generate additional awareness around that, and also to take a good hard look at our offering. I mean, our adaptive is a very nice product. It's pretty seamless. It's got a nice customer interface, but we really haven't marketed it, haven't gotten out there. And we've been sort of languishing in the, you know, $1 to $3 billion range over the past 7 or 8 years. In terms of assets under management or longer-term money. So it's really about perception, and we intend to focus on it quite a bit. So it's both sides that we're investing in at this point.
Great, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Kyle Voigt with KBW. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my question. Just one on Options House. I'm just wondering, now that you've had the acquisition closed for a full quarter, can you just give an update on any attrition that you're seeing? And I know it's still very early days, but also if you can give an update on if you have a better line of sight on the cross-selling or revenue synergy opportunities and the timing of how that will unfold. Thanks.
Sure. So, look, the acquisition went pretty smoothly. The integration is going similarly smoothly. Very happy with the team that we acquired. Love the capabilities that they bring to the table, and I love the energy that they bring to the table. They've definitely helped us move to a more sort of agile environment and gotten a lot more lean in our execution. So that's been working very well. In terms of delivering, you know, the cross-sell and the products out to our customers, it's why the Q3 finish on both the conversion of the clearers and the getting the tools up and running in terms of getting that over to E-Trade are extremely important to us. So more to come in late third quarter, and hopefully by our third quarter's earnings call, we'll be able to give you some more info on that.
Thanks.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Rob Rutschow with CLSA. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
I was wondering if you might be willing to share the level of payment for order flow revenues and what the impact of the options house clearing conversion might mean for that, and then longer term, what, if any, impact moving from 30 to 35% derivatives might have on that revenue line item.
Order flow for the quarter was about $29 million overall. We don't really break out the full quarter effect of Options House on that number. Now, I think you're right that options have a bit of a higher overall payment, and so improving option mix has a lot to do with it. But the real win in improving the option mix is just the regularity of the trading that goes on in the book. It really comes from the commission side. It's not really a desire around the order flow, but the order flow is definitely part of the economics there.
Okay. And if I could just shift gears, are there a couple of key things that you're looking to do better in converting the stock plan clients into brokers or, more importantly, managed asset clients? So, in other words, what are you looking to do better or differently to get more of those clients to convert?
So one of the biggest things that we the challenge that we have on that front is showing stock plan participants that we're more than their stock plan provider. Right, they use us, they look at us on the E-Trade Corporate Services side as the folks who do the plumbing for their stock plan accounts. So getting in front of them earlier, providing education and seminars, dealing with the corporate client up front when we execute the B2B agreement to make sure that we can get on and become a provider of choice for when those individuals have an event in their stock plan and they have additional cash to invest, helping them understand that we have a robot, right, that we're in the space, that we do have the tools that they need. Raising general awareness, as I talked about before, of our longer-term investing solutions. So it's, to me, a lot of it is around that, and then we also talked a little bit in the prepared remarks around some wealth management, right, that could be nice bolt-ons or partnerships that help you provide additional asset management tools or capabilities to our stock plan clients who, you know, have the resources and a lot of times trade off of us to go use others when we have the same tools and products available.
Okay. Thanks for taking my question.
Absolutely.
At this time, I will turn the call back to you, Mr. Rossmer, for any concluding remarks.
Thank you all for joining us on the call, and we look forward to talking to you next quarter. Have a nice evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.